Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Yo Nesbo's dark, gripping new standalone thriller, The Kingdom, tells the story of two brothers and a homecoming that turns deadly, bringing long-buried family secrets to the surface. Nesbo is one of the world's best-selling crime writers, with titles such as The Leopard, Phantom, Police, The Sun, and his latest Harry Hole novel, Knife, all topping the bestseller charts. His books are published in 50 languages, selling well over 33 million copies around the world. Before becoming a crime writer, he played soccer for Norway's Premier League. He's also an accomplished musician. But the latest novel is The Kingdom. It is just out, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Yo Nesbo to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
I really enjoyed this novel, and it's a big book, and there's a lot in it, and it's just terrific. Give me a sense of what the seed was for you of what you thought you wanted to write about as you set off to tell this story.
I think it was the theme of brothers. I probably had that in the back of my head since I grew up with two brothers, and especially my younger brother, who is 1 year younger than me. He passed away from cancer 6 years ago. But we were always like really close, and just like the two brothers in the kingdom, we shared a room and slept in a bunk bed, and we played soccer together until we were 20, and then later on we were playing the same band until he passed away. So he was like my my little brother, always was my little brother. And in the book, I'm trying to, it's not like this is a keyhole looking into the relationship of me and my brother, but I try to use that, you know, that limitless loyalty and unlimited love that you feel for your brother, still sort of a competition also. Having your brother on your team makes you the strongest team in the world, but having him on the other team makes him your fiercest opponent. So it's sort of reflecting that sense of the good and the bad about being that close to your brother.
So Roy has never left this mountain town. It's a quiet mountain town where they grew up. He has never left. Meanwhile, Carl got out right, like when we pick up the book, he's been gone for 15 years. So this is, he's out. And it's safe to say that while these two brothers are brothers and they are close, but there certainly are tensions there that become more and more apparent as time goes on.
It is. It's. I was asked to find a sort of a tagline for the book, and I came up with the tagline: two brothers and one woman. Yeah. And it started out before Carl left to study in the United States. He had a girlfriend, and his Roy, which is 1 year older and is sort of the more introvert loner of the two, he falls deeply in love with Carl's girlfriend. And then 15 years later, he reemerges in the little town with a plan about building a luxurious spa hotel, which is sort of going to save the whole town. And he brings with him Shannon, his wife, whom Roy never had met.
One of the things I found fascinating is Roy is the one telling us this story. It's from his perspective. So, in a way, are you taking sides by having him tell the tale?
It could have been Carl telling the tale, but maybe it's because Roy can see the whole picture, and he is probably a bit more surprises to Carl's character than to Roy. Roy is, like I said, more the dark introvert,
right.
Never did as well in school as Carl did. Carl was popular with the girls and more extrovert. So it sort of makes sense that you tell the story from the introvert brother's point of view. He also has had a secret life, a life away from the eyes of the other people in the town. Very few of the people that we meet here are what they seem, and Carl is definitely not so.
And without giving too much away, I mean, one of the reasons that there was strife in the family is because of the death of their parents.
Mm. It seemed to be an accident. They died in a car crash close to their home. There's also some time after that, the local sheriff disappeared mysteriously, what seemed to be a suicide. But his son, who has taken over as sheriff, has over the years started to investigate both the disappearing of his father, and he has started asking questions about how the parents of Carl and Roy really died.
When I asked you about the seed very early on for this novel and you talked about brothers, you've been writing a lot, it seems to me anyway, and I assume you agree with this, that you've been writing a lot about fathers and sons recently.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. It's been sort of a recurring theme. I'm not sure why, really, because it's not like I set out to write about father and son, although I may have done some with a standalone novel, The Son. But apart from that, even in the Harry Hole series, there's a lot about father and sons. So of course it may have to do with my own relationship to my father, but probably has at some level. Although I had a very, close and warm relationship to my father. But at some point in my life, he was not a hero, not the man I thought he was, which had to do also in that case about family secrets, or at least secrets that had been hidden for me for many years.
And those are things as humans we navigate and can be obviously can be very upsetting, but also were traumatic, but certainly defining. And so writing about them for you, not only is it I assume a way of understanding it further, but also sharing with us that we all have some understanding of the secrets that we find out in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's when you find out about the sort of the secret lives or lies that you've been told, this comes from the people who are closest to you, you realize that it's very difficult to know for sure that you really, really know anybody, really. You may know their personality, but the details in their history are maybe hidden for you. So in many ways, I mean, The Kingdom is a very general book about the human condition, I guess, but especially about family. And if it has one theme beside brothers, it's about loyalty towards your family and the dilemma when that is in conflict with obeying the rules and laws of society, which comes first. And in The Kingdom, it's quite clear. The father of Carl and Roy tells him at a very young age that you can't trust anything. You can't trust society. You can't trust the authorities. You can't even trust your neighbors. The only thing you can trust is family. Family is everything.
Joe Nesbo is our guest. The name of the new novel is The Kingdom. This, from my counting, is your fourth standalone. What does that allow you, given that you have a very successful series with the Harry Hole series? What does a standalone allow you to do?
First of all, of course, it gives you the freedom to create a new world. Nothing has happened yet that you can't change, and you don't have to think what the consequences or what happens in that novel. That is one thing that sets it apart from the series. What I also often do in the standalone novels is that I use a first-person narrative, and that opens up some doors and closes other doors. It means that you only have one perspective, one point of view, which means that it's more like a one-camera production. But it also makes it easier to reflect on things in a sort of an inner monologue, and to use emotion, to use humor, to use even the storyteller who is consciously or unconsciously lying to himself. So you have to decide sort of whether you trust the voice and the story of the storyteller. I find that interesting because, as we probably are experienced these days, especially in the United States, is that there are several narratives and you have to sort of decide which one to trust.
Absolutely. Let us talk for a moment about one of the things that we have multiple narratives on in this country, of course, is coronavirus and COVID, which the world is dealing with, as you are, as you speak to us from Oslo, Norway. But has COVID had an effect on your writing? And I like asking writers this question. I've been doing it for the past several months because it is, by nature, an isolated profession. So what impact has it had for you?
My work day hasn't changed that much. So in that respect, I think that writers are probably more lucky than most other people trying to make a living. I think that in the storytelling itself, it has happened so recently that it hasn't sort of appeared in any of my stories yet. I just spoke to Michael Connelly, the American crime writer.
Sure.
And in his latest novel, there's COVID-19. He likes to write in sort of in the present and take into stories everything that's happening, who's the president and so on. I'm sure that in the future, it's unavoidable that it will somehow show up in the story. It's just like when the mobile phone changed the story writing on crime writers. You couldn't pretend that it wasn't there yet, that you had the possibility to track somebody carrying a mobile phone, and which meant that many crime writers had to rethink their plots. I think that COVID-19 is the same thing, that you have to relate to that in some way.
Do you think that it will end up on paper for you eventually?
I think that everything that happens in my life, and also things that I read and I listen to, does end up on paper. I think that's also unavoidable. You think that you may have a naive conception that you just invent things, but whenever I look at my writing in hindsight, something I do from time to time when I travel abroad and I'm intrigued about the book I wrote 5 or 6 years ago, that's when I realized that the things I was writing about was things that were going on in my life and around me. Although I wasn't aware of that at the time of writing, I thought I was, you know, just creating a fantasy. So yeah, definitely.
Given that your books are translated, and this book is a translation that we have in America, does that delay that understanding of, or that realization that you're writing about yourself and your life and where you are at that time?
I don't know. I think that, of course, it's unavoidable that things will get lost in translation. Exactly what gets lost, I'm not sure. I did read the first chapter of my first novel when it was translated to English, and I saw what got lost in translation. But I also realized that I could not have done a better job than a translator to sort of solve those problems and find a solution to it. So nowadays, I'm saving myself the frustration of seeing what gets lost and just trust my translator.
That's a great answer. Because it would seem to me if it were me, it would drive me nuts to think about what, especially if I've written the way that you do of where, with such humor, and there is just this wink and it's so beautifully displayed, that it would seem to me that you would be very concerned of how that ends up, so that, yeah, not reading it would be the easiest way to deal with that, I guess.
Yeah, well thank you, but hearing you say this, I guess I don't have to worry too much.
Well, that's the other thing. You are successful in Norway, of course, but you are successful here in the States. So obviously, so whatever you're doing is working, right? I mean, that's the good part.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you write in a small language like Norwegian, it's extremely important to have a good English translator, because the English translation is what is going to be used when you get translated to, let's say, Korean or other more exotic languages and smaller countries, where it's impossible to find a good translator who can translate directly from Norwegian.
Well, now you're playing a game of telephone where it's the third, you know, the third hand that it's in by the time it hits the reader.
Yeah. Translating is like, in Norwegian, we call it the whispering game. But you know, never know. If there's like a really clever translator, maybe it'll get better. I don't know.
The fact, though, of the stories that you tell, and the fact that they're so chilling and just, you know, spine tingling, that is translatable. And the ideas that you come up with, is that the type of book you always wanted to write? Is that what it was always about for you?
When I start out writing a book, I have an idea which is normally always the story. I can't really analyze it and say that, okay, so this is about father-son relationship, or this is the state of the world in Northern Europe right now, or this is about human trafficking, or this is about being unable to love somebody. It's only that I have a story and I know that I want to tell that story. And what that tells me, that I feel the need to tell that story, is that there are probably several themes in there that I find interesting. And so during the process of writing, then I realize what it's about. I was just listening to a book called Conversations with the American rock musician Tom Petty. Yes. And it's fascinating to hear him saying the same thing, that he started writing a song and he doesn't really know what it's about. It's only in hindsight, when the words are there, that he realizes what it's really about. The story, in my case, the story is Boss.
Joe Nesbo is our guest. The name of the new novel is The Kingdom, and it's published by Knauf. I mentioned that you're a music guy. You've been in a band for a long time. You write songs as well. I've asked this question of journalists a lot, but does songwriting help you become a better novel writer, or does being a novel writer make you a better songwriter?
I think that writing lyrics makes me a better novelist. Understanding that you can tell a story in three verses and a refrain, mm-hmm. and that you have to trust your reader to paint the whole picture, to sort of direct the movie. That is the same goes for the novel. That when I started on my first novel, I thought it was about filling pages and pages of words, you know, doing sort of the opposite I do when I write lyrics, where I have to, be very careful with every sentence, that it doesn't get too long, that is, that I have to move on. And then I realized it's exactly the same with a novel. You have to trust the intelligence and imagination of your reader.
And lyrics can be more abstract, can't they? I mean, they can mean different things to different people.
Sorry?
I said lyrics can be a bit more abstract, though, can't they? They can mean many different things to different people.
I think that putting in different layers of meaning in a story is something that has always come natural to me. I mean, it's also sometimes it's something I can interpret into my own stories in hindsight. But most of the time, there are I'm quite conscious of what I'm doing and what are the multiple layers of a story and what is a sort of a when you feel you get two stories told as one story or the other way around, that you have parallel stories telling the same story. It's certainly most of the time by design. I mean, that is, I think it was, or I know it was Milan Kundera, the novelist, who said that the novel has value just as long as the novel does what only the novel can do. And I think that's very accurately put, that the novel has survived for so many decades because it's a unique way of telling a story. Now, of course, one can argue that if you look at some of the movies being made the last 20 years, they are based on novels. And some of them, like, for example, the Coen brothers, No Country for Old Men, it's more or less the novel of Cormac McCarthy from page one until the end, just a couple of scenes that are different. So it's not completely true, but I still think that for me, having worked in different medias with TV scripts, movies, and songwriting, the novel is still the freest form of expressing yourself, of really creating something new using the same medium time after time.
It's funny you mentioned Cormac McCarthy, because I thought of him as I was reading this last novel. There are very McCarthy-like moments in this book. His prose, of course, is very spare, but there is that vibe.
It would be strange if I was not inspired by Cormac McCarthy, since I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So yes, I've you're probably right.
You were talking about the first novel, and the first novel was a Harry Hole novel, right? Was the plan for it to be a series, or was the plan for it to just be the first book and hopefully there would be a second and question mark?
The plan was to write something, a short story, and send it to a publishing house, and not for them to publish it, but for them to hopefully see that there was some talent, then sort of asking me to write something, a real story for them. I never told them until later that I wrote that first, at least the first draft that they got for the novel, in 5 weeks. But when I realized that they were planning on publishing the book, I was a bit worried, you know. So I asked, you know, can I have it back, please, and rework it? Because I'm not sure you really want to publish this. And so they said yes. And so we worked a little bit on it, not that much, really. Yes, that was my first novel. And in many ways, it was a coincidence that it was a crime novel, because I just had 5 weeks in which to write novels. So I figured that, okay, I know the head and the tail of a crime novel, so it'll have to be a crime novel.
I have listened to many of your books on audio, and this is one of my big questions for you. And that is, because we talk about translation, but pronunciation. So I've heard, and you have said it, so you say Harry Hole. I've also heard it in one of the novels by one of the narrators as Harry Hole, and I've also heard it as Hula. Which is right?
The one in the middle is closest. Let me put it that way.
Hula. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a quite a common Norwegian name, but I chose that name, his last name, in that first novel because he was traveling to Australia. So I wanted that his name to be a bit awkward in English when I grew up. So even my own name, which is in Norwegian pronounced Jo Nesbø, I just say when I go abroad, my name is Jo Nesbø. Just to make it easy for people.
Just make it easy for us broadcasters.
Exactly.
Another Harry book be out next? Is that what you're working on?
What's in the pipeline right now is a collection of short stories, crime stories, and then another collection of short stories, science fiction stories, actually. And after that, it may be a Harry Hole novel, yes.
You know, and I should mention this for people if they're not aware, you're a wonderful writer for young adults, too, and for kids. That seems something that you enjoy doing.
My daughter, she would, I would be like her jukebox when it comes to stories. She would just put the coin on and demand a certain kind of story. When she was a kid, I would tell so many stories. So eventually I sat down and I wrote a book based on some of the characters I'd used in the stories I told her. And that became a children's series.
Dr. Proctor's Fart Powder. You know,
exactly.
You're a good dad.
Yeah. My daughter loved everything about it except the farting. She said, "I didn't ask for any farting." She said, "I said no. That was my privilege, you know, to put that in."
Well, your new novel, which is just tremendous, is The Kingdom. It is published by Knopf. Jo Nesbø, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, Jo Nesbø's new novel is The Kingdom. It is published by Knopf. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.